Hi everyone, welcome back to Not About the Weather. This is episode 4 of our experimental pop culture commentary podcast that we are running for you out of our houses across the world. Not About the Weather is a new podcast from the team initially behind Not Another Teen Wolf podcast and some lovely friends. And we are doing a podcast about pop culture, general life, anything that we want to talk about, conversational, opinion-based chatter about anything that we're feeling strongly about this week. And we hope that you're enjoying listening to what we've given you so far. Please let us know. We've got lots of ideas for the future, some of which we just discussed and I will not reveal to you at this point. But yeah, I think that we have a slight groove going. It's just quite awkward to introduce. So we'll move on from that. This episode's hosts are myself, Natalie, and then we have Ariana and Brittany joining us this week as well. And so we're just going to hang out and talk about the things we've been feeling this week. So, I mean, I hope that it's going to be something that continues to be worth listening to or is listening to in the, you know, is worth listening to in the first place. How have you guys felt so far about this? We recorded one episode each last weekend or a couple of weekends ago. So this is number 4 for the series or for this podcast. Is it working?
It's interesting because this isn't going to come out for, I realize that this is going to come out like in November or sometime in like, yeah, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to try and roll it out a little faster. We recorded the two weekends, two shows on the one weekend, and then we had to kind of work out like the iTunes and like it was a problem. So I'm hoping that they won't become too dated if, like, for example, we're talking about a current event and then it comes out like a week later and it's like no one cares anymore.
This is like the future when this is going to come out. We'll like know if the world is ending or we have our first girl president. Like those are our only two options.
I think this episode will come out before the election, I hope. I'm wondering if we should do one about the election or, you know, I have a friend, if she's available, who's actually flown over. She works in a company, like a nonprofit kind of like social justice lobbying system in the UK. And she actually came over and was seconded on the last Obama election to do campaigning in America, even though she's British. And she's currently in New York doing it for Hillary. This is Megan, by the way, Brittany, who we went to dinner with and stuff. She's currently in New York campaigning for Hillary and working like as a secondment from the British organization she works for. They like send people around the world to help on campaigns they believe in. So
fascinating.
I was thinking she might be able to come on and talk about that, but I don't know if we could get her before the election because I don't know how busy she is. Anyway, just a thought. I'm hoping that the world doesn't end. How about you?
Ending would be good.
Yeah. I mean, I'd rather be able to stay in this country. I guess we'll find out soon.
Oh, my God. Oh, I can't believe it. I just can't believe it. Like, I think it should go without saying that, like, everyone's gripe for the next, you know, for the past year and for the next possibly eternity is going to be this election cycle, particularly the fact that Donald Trump was allowed to do any of this, basically. I don't understand, but I feel like that's a whole nother conversation for another day. But yes, you were saying it'll be the future when this comes out, so we'll know if it worked or not. Or
now that we've lost all of our red states, yes, it will be the future.
This comes out. Oh, God. Do you think that we have red state listeners? I don't think that we do.
I'm sure we do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, sorry. I don't know these things. I assume that anyone who's in any way interested in the entertainment industry is not conservative. That is my entire experience of life. Like, I do not presume that anyone that's interested in pop culture is not inherently progressive. So perhaps that's a massive misconception, but it has been my experience with people that I know so far. I just don't see those two worlds melding well.
There's a great, I keep referring like a lot of things back to 30 Rock, mainly because I've been rewatching it because it's my, basically my meditation every day. And There's a great episode where Jack Donaghy is trying to get a Republican celebrity to come and do something, like, to, like, put a good face to the party. And this is, like, a lot, like, before Barack Obama was running in the episode, like, in real time. And it's, like, hilarious him trying to convince Tracy Jordan to become a Republican just so he could be the face of the Republican Party, because there are no good Republican celebrities. Because, like, just no one is, like, really vocal about being Republican in the public eye. And so, yeah, I'm sure there are
Republican celebrities. Oh, yeah. I just feel like they keep it on the down low because it's not really cool in Hollywood.
I think at this point, either they are, like, you know, privately bigoted and are not speaking about it.
Okay, or... but that's not fair. Because Republicans as a whole, they aren't all bigoted. Unfortunately, this election season has made it look that way.
Yeah. What I was going to say, or that they believe in certain values of the party in terms of, you know, a lot of it I know is, like, financial, like, you know, that kind of thing, like what they believe about, like, you know, how finance should be used is a big part of conservatism, as far as I know. I'm really not political.
Small government is a...
And that they do believe in those things, but that the touchstone of all of the issues is now become, like, the humanitarian, you know, and the social issues, and that those are the things that, like, you can't really, like, you know, it's not as much of an ethical, moral judgment to judge someone on, like, how they want to have their money, you know, spent, or, like, you know, how they want to spend their money, or how they want, you know, elections to happen and stuff like that. But it is more of a moral and ethical judgment, you know, what they believe about people's rights, and that's kind of overshadowing any other qualities that someone might be a Republican for, I guess. And it's kind of hard to pin yourself with that. So I don't know, this has gotten really intense.
Try living here, it's a little rough right now.
Maybe I will try and get Megan on. She really wants to come on already, so maybe I will try and we can have an election special. How about that?
Would
you guys like that? Cool. All right, so we'll move on to the rest of our normal episode now. We have a website, if you would like to contact us, which is natwpodcast.com. It's the easiest hub to find out everything about this podcast and our flagship Teen Wolf podcast that Karen and I run. But if you want to get in touch as well, you can join us on NATW Podcast on Twitter. That same handle, NATW Podcast on Facebook, which is very new. So go and like that, please, because Facebook likes are like gold for some reason. Gmail and Instagram, that same handle, NATW Podcast. And then the website for this podcast in particular is notabouttheweatherpodcast.com, and that's where the episodes are posted, where we kind of post our little show recap with all of the links to stuff that we've talked about, and where you can kind of follow us. Like, it's a Tumblr-based platform, so you can follow it as you would a Tumblr account, and see it come up on your Tumblr dash and send an ask there. So that's us. That's where you can reach us. And, you know, if anyone's still listening, I really don't want to offend anyone for political reasons. However, I'm very happy to offend people for moral or ethical reasons. So hopefully, no matter what your political affiliation, you have decent views about human rights and that you look past tradition and vote in the US election in a way that, you know, protects that. So hopefully no one's turned off because of that. But honestly, if you don't want to listen to this podcast because you don't want to hear us criticize Donald Trump, then we probably don't need you. Okay, let's move on from that. Obsession to share and a grievance to air. So this is the main part of what we do. This is the moment where we decide whether we're going to do our complaining first, or we're going to get out excited first. So every week we have everyone brings a hype and a gripe, something that they're really stoked about and something that they want to, you know, moan about, and talks about it, rants about it, and that's what we're going to do. Until now, we've done a coin toss to decide which goes first. I don't really have a coin on me right now, so does anyone have either a preference or a coin handy?
Can't you just ask Siri to flip a coin?
Did you see that there's a little bit of feedback at the end of
this
episode
about that? Yeah, that's what made me think about it.
I've never heard of this. I don't have Siri. I don't have an iPhone. So I don't know about this mythical online coin flipping. So
okay, I'll ask. Yeah, let's decide what's heads and what's tails, though.
What are we flipping a coin on?
Well, to do hyper gripe first, so I need one to be heads and one to be tails. Like, is gripe heads or is hype heads?
I feel like gripe should be tails.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, let's ask Siri again. Siri, flip a coin for me.
It's heads.
It's heads.
Okay, so does that mean heads goes first? Does that mean...
That means that we're going to talk about things that we like first.
Anyone got a preference? I'm very curious about Ariana's. If this is what I think it is, I want to know immediately. So, Ariana, please tell us what you're excited about this week.
Well, I was looking ahead, and since this comes out in November, I decided to make it, like, J.K. Rowling themed. So my hype for this week is the Wolfstar ship, which I only just found out is their name. I've obviously shipped them in their young adult life, which is the Remus Lupin and Sirius Black ship. And I love it so much, and they're precious. And my goal in life is to write a picture book in the style of Vader's Little Princess, but with Harry Potter being raised by Sirius Black and Remus Lupin, called My Two Dads, where they get up to hijinks. So that is my life.
What did you say comes out in November? Do you mean Fantastic Beasts or?
Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah, okay. I was like, something about Sirius and Remus is coming out in November?
I wish.
Wait a second. This is very important to me, Ariana. It's incredibly important to me. This is the first thing that I ever shipped off my own volition, if you know what I mean. And it was not really fandom influenced. It was not really like I looked online and saw people saying that, and then I was like, oh yeah, it was, I read the books and I was like, I think that's a thing. I really think that's a thing. And so it was the first time that I really believed, if you know what I mean, in shipping, and not just in shipping, but in reading a text, even though I was already knew that I was queer myself. The way I engaged with media was not particularly in that mindset, and it was not particularly with a lack of heteronormativity or anything like that. But with this, I was very much like, oh, like, okay, this is what I am seeing here. And this is definitely how I'm reading this. And obviously then it became one of the most, you know, popular ships on the internet. And I think it's a huge, huge waste that Rowling did not go with that, in terms of if she wanted her little bit of off-screen confirmation of, you know, of any queer characters. I think it is ridiculous that she chose Dumbledore, though I definitely did read it with Dumbledore in the last book as well. I read Dumbledore and Grindelwald and was like, that's probably a thing, isn't it? It did not shock me at all. But I cannot believe that she's so outright denied this, that she's been like, no, it's not a thing, you know. And even, you know, Remus and Tonks doesn't bother me, you know, people don't just have to be gay or straight, but it's the biggest, like, I'm not even exaggerating, it is the most crushing waste of an opportunity that would have been harmless otherwise to have made it a thing.
And I don't even feel like it's a wasted opportunity, because I just ignore everything she's
well,
which I think is hilarious, that, like, as a community, like a fandom community, we've all just decided, oh yeah, this is canon, and J.K. Rowling doesn't know anything, like, whatever. JK, you don't know what you're talking about. Of course they're gay.
And I love them so much. I don't know if I will ever love, no, that's not, I love so many things so much, but I was going to say, I don't know if I'll ever love anything like this, but it holds an immense place in my heart. And, you know, once I did, you know, become interested in it, there was also a fan fiction being released in that era, I guess, like kind of like from 2003 to 2005, which has become, for a huge amount of the old Harry Potter community, like the one true canon of that era for the Marauders.
The Shoebox Project?
Yeah, the Shoebox Project. Have you read it?
My friend got it bound for me last year for my birthday.
The girl I was talking about earlier in this show? Megan got me a bound copy for my birthday last year too, had it formatted and made into a physical hardcover book. And I have a Remus tattoo. I have a tattoo for Remus, and it's a moon, and it's the moon from Shoebox. It's like in their notes, like the signature that he uses. That is my Remus tattoo, which I have behind my ear. So I cannot express how much everything to do with this circumstance means to me. I did not know that you felt so passionately about it, Ariana. I'm very excited.
Yes, I quite love them.
Yeah, it's just such a... I would say it's a waste. I agree with you, J.K. Rowling. I can't... On one hand, I love her, but on the other hand, she needs to stop. Like, and it is quite stressful. I don't know. Brittany, how do you feel about J.K. Rowling's relationship with the Harry Potter canon at the moment?
Oh, man, I am so not into it. I've never been into it. I think anything that's written on Pottermore just doesn't exist. So, like, all of this supplemental material that I'm supposed to be taking in for, like, years and years and years, I don't listen to. Because it's just, first of all, it's too much. And second of all, I just don't, it doesn't change anything that I read in the first books. So why do I need to read it? I like my reading of it. I like hearing what other people think about it. Like this ship, I didn't know existed till Ariana brought it up in another podcast we were on, I think.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, because I don't pay attention to anything.
Biggest that. One, but okay, carry on.
Well, I don't live like when I read these, yeah. I wasn't online.
Yeah.
So I didn't get a Facebook until right before college. Like I didn't have MySpace. I was never online. So, and I'm going to actually get into that with my gripe. But yeah, so I don't, like, in my head reading these, like, ships and stuff didn't even happen. Like, I never thought to, like, put two characters together who weren't together. And so, like, I like getting involved in that kind of stuff now, later on, but I'm not going back and reading, like, anything that JK says in the tweet as something that is like written in stone and can never be changed.
It's so complicated because I love extra canonical material usually. Like I genuinely do. I love when little things, you know, the authors talk about stuff or if an actor talks about a headcanon they have for a character in a TV show. I actually love that. And I'm actually really, to the chagrin of other people that I know, I don't believe in death of the author, generally. But with J.K. Rowling, I need her to stop. Like she's my exception. She's my exception to death of the author. I don't like it. But for her, I love it. Because, and I used to like it. I used to like her old little website where you could, like, have little...
Loved her old website.
You know? And follow the little, like, you know, clues and find little things. That was really great. And conceptually, I love that she's got all of this information about Pottermore. But sometimes it feels like she's making it up now as opposed to like this is what I believe all the time and I'm just telling you about it now, which is not what I want. I like it when the people know everything. They know what they're talking about and then they just happen to tell you about it later. That's not what her Pottermore stuff feels like at all. So
the stuff she says now also feels like so removed from the people that we met in the books, which I mean makes sense since it's been so long for her. And she's had time to, like, sit there and sift through it. But, like, sometimes she says things and I'm like, no one else is reading it that way, lady. Like, so, I don't know.
Yeah, I think she's a little removed is a good word. I was going to say deluded. That's maybe too harsh. But it's strange. It's very strange. And it's sort of been getting worse. And I didn't realize how bad it had gotten until I kind of took a step back and looked at, like, some of the stuff she was saying. Which I think we can talk about more in your gripe as well, Ariana. But I looked at some of the stuff and I'm just like, I don't understand. But anyway, Sirius and Remus, very important. What was it that you liked best about them, Ariana? Because I would rather talk about what makes you happy about this.
I don't know. I like how they're such opposites, but they're like so cute. I don't know. I just think they're precious. Mm. Yeah.
I will say with what I talked about on our last episode that Brittany was on with me, and you would know when I was talking about the History Boys being such an intrinsic text, you know, that I will quote and reference it, or like my way of phrasing something will be something taken from that, not as a direct intentional quote, but it's like a touchstone in the way that I speak and in the, you know, the metaphors I make and stuff like that, the way that I relate something to the world. The Shoebox Project, the fan fiction that we mentioned about, that's a very incredibly seminal text in the world of fandom, is another one of maybe five things in the world, if you know what I mean. Like, if we're talking about any works of art or whatever, the Shoebox is another constant touchstone in the way that both me, a lot of my friends that I've known for a long time, and Leo as well, all speak. And two more things I will say about Wolfstar and queer canon, etc., is that, yeah, as I said, it's the one of the first things that as a teenager I read the books and was like picking up on something that I felt was there because I was removing the heteronormative view, and so that was always going to be quite important to me. And then there's another aspect of Shoebox itself rather than the books. One of the chapters, there's a chapter in which Remus, you know, as a teen at Hogwarts, kind of realizes what he's feeling about Sirius. And it's Ariana, the chapter in the library when he overhears Fabian and Caradoc. His realization in that scene of what he wants in terms of, you know, whether it's his sexuality or, you know, people and stuff like that, is one of the best described emotional moments, especially to do with coming out or sexuality, but just one of the best, most visceral moments of emotive writing that I've ever read in anything, let alone fan fiction, like in novels, in anything. It's just such beautiful writing done by girls who were like 18 at the time, because I still follow one of them on Tumblr and she's like my age now. So it's just crazy, but it's so amazing. So I'm so glad that you brought it up, and I'm going to talk about it much more with you in future.
I was Googling this for a while, and now I see the gif of when Harry comes home and then Cyrus hugs him and Remus is standing in the doorway and they're both like so happy, and I'm like, well,
it's
all right, I'm into
so,
it now.
It's so married.
Getting into it, who first pointed it out to me was my best friend, the one who sent me the book last year for my birthday, and she was like, yeah, don't you know they're like in love? And I was like, wait, they are? Of course they are. It all makes sense now.
Once
you see it, you see it in everything.
It's unbelievable, the canon in the book.
They send him a joint birth, like Christmas present. Like,
yeah, you know,
how much more married do you need to be?
And there's a bit where they're all in the kitchen arguing over something about the order in Grimmauld Place. And it's like, and they make a point to like have Remus. Like, Sirius is, I think, arguing with Molly or something, and Remus, it says something like Remus's eyes, like, fixed on Sirius, and then, like, 40 lines or, like, 50 or 60 lines of text later, she goes in again to say that Remus finally looking away from Sirius, if you know what I mean. Like, she was, and, like, they're so married, and that, like, that he was, like, silently communicating that whole time.
She wrote, like, when they met, they like embraced like lovers. Like, she wrote that in there.
I think it says brothers. I think people have tried to correct that, but
maybe.
But yeah, it's really, they are incredibly in tune with each other as partners, and it is written that way. And I feel like that's a pretty significant thing and a pretty easy way to interpret that. So I don't appreciate her being like, definitely not a thing. Sirius liked girls, even though he had no romantic plot at any point in the books. It just, she needed to make it that's what he was because reasons. So I agree. We'll just ignore her. But Brittany, it's beautiful. And next time you read the series, you know, regardless of any fandom.
I wish I knew this before the summer when I reread the series.
I'm sorry. Sorry. They're so beautiful.
I guess I have to reread them again.
And it just makes me... The Remus and Tonks thing is like... It's interesting. It's fine. It happened. But it's not exactly what I would have would have liked to see.
Well, I mean, of course he would pick her because she can turn into like anybody. So he probably turn into.
And I think in the Order of the Phoenix movie, right after Sirius dies, they're at you know the bit that they added into the movie where like the house, you know, the bit around the burrow, like the fields caught fire and they're all like running, freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not in the books for whatever reason. That's the first time that you see Remus and Tonks when they're a couple, or when I think Harry doesn't know they're a couple, but, you know, if you read the books, you know they are. And she is done up like Sirius. Like, she's got, like, black hair and, like, I think she's got, like, a choker collar and, like, a coat that is so similar to Sirius's. And it's just – and I know that they're cousins or whatever, but it's just – I was just like, really, really, this is happening? So, anyway, I love them. I very much love them, and it is sad to me, but they will always be very special. So anyway, hopefully that is a thing that other people know about. I know for a fact we have a couple of listeners who are going to feel me on the Shoebox Project thing, because I feel like we've spoken about it with a couple of people before. But moving on from that, you've got a book-based one as well, Brittany. So what in particular... was the circumstance, because I heard a few mentions this week of her name going around, but not sure what's going on.
Okay, so Ursula Le Guin was the topic of our book hype author special this week, and the reason we chose her was because we were doing some book news and we came across this article about her where a collection of her works is being added to the Library of America. So she, Kenton is like one of, I think Philip Roth is the only other one. She's like the only living person to have her works there. And she's like this incredible, like science fiction, poetry, nonfiction, historical fiction author. She's written so much. She's in her 80s and she just has like these incredible series and so much amazing, like great, just grounded, like feminist work. And she was just so interesting. And I'm just really pumped to like be digging into her, like her whole collection of work. And so we each, Karen and Kristen and I picked some books of hers and we read them. And I read this, like I picked one of her series, which is in like this self-contained cycle called the Hennish cycle. And it's all about, the description on Wikipedia made it seem like so Star Trek-y. So I was like, yes, this is totally catered for me. I'm going to have the best time reading this. And it's like, they pitch it as this series of books that are like all about like, you know, the planets can finally like communicate with one another. And so they're on like these, like missions to like go and like it's very anthropological, like learn about each other and like create, you know, a big confederation. So it's like it's so Star Trek. And so I pick up the first book and it's so weird, and it's about like this, like basically this anthropologist who goes to a planet, but this planet just happens to have like dwarves and elves, and they like have like these awesome underground cities, but it's not really into where the series eventually gets because it's very early. And so I had to work my way through that one. But I'm just really pumped to get into like the actual interplanetary stuff that's going to come of this series. And then there's like tons of short stories that she wrote and novellas that feed into it. And you can like pick and choose what you want to read. There's really no order. So, yeah, she's just so interesting and has written some really creepy and cool stuff in her lifetime. And also, she is just an amazing, amazing person. She is so funny and sharp and witty. Like, a lot of people have been referring to her as a living legend since she got admitted into the Library of America. And she, like, wrote back to this reporter being like, I hate that people are calling me that. I'm still alive. Like, I'm still here. I have a lot more to do. And her husband, this is the cutest thing and the real reason why I wanted to read and learn everything about this woman. Her and her husband are like this cute little couple who live in Oregon, and they sit on their porch every night and they read to each other after dinner. And it's so cute.
Hmm.
I've known her name for like a very long time. I don't think I've ever read anything of hers. I'm just flicking through this list of stuff, and I don't think I've heard too much about her. I mainly know about her because my favorite author is very heavily influenced by her and talks about her a lot, which is Neil Gaiman.
Yes.
And I believe he was talking about this happening, which is why I would have, like the Library of America mm-hmm. thing, which is why I might have seen it. So, I feel like that, you know, it's definitely something that we should all go and look at. It sounds very weird. I don't know, like, I don't do well with weird sometimes. So, like, I don't, is it like very immersive, like very readable, even though it's so weird, or do you kind of have to...
No, that is one thing. Her and across the board, everyone who was reading her for the first time was saying she comes at it from a very anthropological standpoint. So it's a lot of detail and a lot mm-hmm. of exposition, and she really builds the world well, but it's a lot of her writing is very hard to follow because it like mm-hmm. jumps around a lot. There's even like this commencement address that I read of hers called The Left-Handed Commencement Address was very, it didn't really like culminate until the last, like, you know, little bit of it. And so it's very
like the
hard
actual
to, like,
point she was trying
yeah,
to
it's
make.
Very hard to like nail down where she is getting to until she's like really into the groove of her writing. And so it's something to get, you have to get used to, but it's really entertaining. Like I could see it being very hard to just kick off and really, you know, if you like are like, oh, I'm going to read this book today, you'll probably have to come back to it because it took me a little while to get into it.
I had never heard of her before until you guys did her for book hype, but apparently she's a big deal. So she sounds very cool. Would you say her books are more like, what does she focus on? Characters, world building, plot? What do you think is?
I think it's definitely
her strongest suit.
It's definitely world building. She has these worlds in her head. Like, you can really see that she knows every detail. Like, if you wanted to wander off from the book and go behind a rock that's 40 feet to your left, she would know what's behind it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very, very heavy on world building.
How would you feel about her extra canonical material in that case?
I think she has it because she wrote like every series has like, oh, you can also check out these 14 novellas and short stories that I wrote about it. So I think now she might not, she's sort of like, the great thing about reading about her is how offhanded she is about things. When people ask her about specific works and stuff like that, she's like, oh yeah, that was a time. It was great. Like, she doesn't want to, like, really live in the past. She's very, a very forward-thinking person. So she is very, like, not into, like, you know, going back and talking about things. She wants to always be looking at what's next. So, I mean, extra canonical material now from her, I don't think it would come about. But she would definitely, if she's in the middle of writing something, I'm sure she would have... tons. She would have her own Pottermore, basically.
That sounds really, really intense, and a very good lead into what my hype actually was, because I've actually had trouble in the last year reading. Like, I've had trouble focusing on reading, and I think that there's a problem with Twitter, and I think there's a problem with attention spans and stuff like that. And I don't know if it's just me, but I have real trouble like burning through books. And then sometimes I find fan fiction easier, and I don't know if it's just because, oh, it's in a world that I'm already want to be immersed in. Like, oh, I'm watching Captain America, and oh, I can just slip right into something where I don't have to, like, you know, dedicate my brain to getting invested in it. I already know what's going on. Or if it's just that I'm reading on my phone and it's easier than holding a book or whatever. But I've been trying to get better at reading, and it's the same with writing as well. Like, the less I write in long form, the harder I find it, and therefore the more you do it, etc. But one of the things that I've done recently is I bought, because I have some disposable income, I went on eBay. I was talking to someone on Twitter and was like, oh my God, you like this thing? A girl that I met at Comic-Con had a header image, her Twitter icon, and this thing that is apparently like a long-term obsession with her, was a portrait from the Trixie Belden mysteries, which were, this is so random, and I asked you guys before we recorded if you've ever heard of this, and it doesn't surprise me that much that you haven't, but there are a series of novels for kids, I guess, published from maybe 1948 to something like 1980, like an ongoing series of detective mysteries, somewhat like Nancy Drew, but for, you know, a teenage girl, very different style to Nancy Drew in her lifestyle and her location and everything like that. And they were something that I had as a kid. They are like, I had like a few of them, random ones, you know, like not all in order or anything. And I loved them. And I don't know anyone else in the world that had them, except for randomly my older brother's girlfriend once was like, oh my God, Trixie Belden. I haven't seen that in ages. My own copies then were secondhand. I think someone just picked them up at a garage sale and dumped them in my room. That's how I mainly got books as a child. They were just presented to me in boxes of, here's some new books. But because I have some money now, I went on eBay after having this conversation. I went on eBay and I bought a complete set. Like I found a secondhand set and I bought them and I had them delivered. And I've just been like burning through these children's novels. I guess they're middle grade or something like that. They're the characters, the main character, Trixie, she's about 13 or so in the first book. And it's you know, it's kids detective stuff. Like, oh, a crime happened. But it's really, I love the setting of it because, and I wanted to talk about it mainly because it's been getting me back into reading because I can read one of them in like a day. Like if I sat down and started and finished, I could read it in a couple of hours. But like I can read it on the way to work and then back and like, so I'm burning through them really fast, and I'm like, oh, I'm reading some books again. And they're all really old copies. They're really yellowed, and they smell nice. And when I was a child, all of mine were, like, ripped apart because I used to eat paper. Did you guys ever do that? I've met a few people that used to do this, that with old books they used to rip the edges of the pages and eat the paper. And I used to do it as a kid, and I randomly found out later that this is a thing that some people do, like a certain quality of paper, that it was actually semi-common. And you're both like, oh, my God, kill her. But
no, I loved books. That would have been – I would be horrified.
Anyway.
If you rip a book.
I haven't eaten the paper of any of these, but apparently it used to be a thing for people.
I have a great paper eating story.
Oh, good.
This is great.
Let's hear it.
In kindergarten, we used to have to line up in alphabetical order to get our, like, little books checked by our teacher. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. The kid who was always in front of me used to eat the edges of his paper from his book. So being a naturally curious student, one day I crumpled it up into a tiny little ball and I ate it. And then that night, I think I had my first ever panic attack. And I was 5 years old, and I came out into the kitchen. I have such a vivid memory of this. And my mother, till this day, will not admit this happened. Because she's like, Brittany, I really don't remember this. You cried a lot. And so I came out into the kitchen. I just remember being so scared and being like, I ate a piece of paper, and I think it's stuck in my stomach, and I don't know what to do about it. And I was so terrified because I thought it was going to kill me. And I'm like, but this kid, Justin, he eats it all the time, and he hasn't died, and I don't know. I was so nervous. My mom was like, go to bed. But anyway, that was the first and last time I ever ate.
Your mother's just like, whatever, child.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry that happened to you.
I traumatized myself.
I obviously would not do that now. And it's most paper is not good for it either. Most paper tastes like really chemically and terrible. But there's these, old publishing paper like that what those ones that are like really yellow and soft. I used to eat it, so anyway, my
good paper to eat.
It's a good paper to eat.
Good to know, like if you're stuck on a design with just a bunch of FedEx paper, like in that movie Casper.
I don't know if it would keep you alive or anything. It was just weird habit. Point is, the Trixie Belden books, they're so great. I do keep laughing at, like, the little bits of exposition, like, because they're designed to, like, be picked up, you know, anyone could be picked up by anyone, and you don't have to read from the beginning through to the end of all 49, you know, 30 books or whatever there are. So, you know, every time somewhere early on in the book, there'll be a conversation between the characters that's like exposition of like, you know, they'll really over-explain something like, oh, remember when we did that thing? Like, you know, like as opposed to just talking casually in the way that you would in real life. And exposition always makes me laugh, but it's very blatant in these, but I find it cute. But it's actually, they're actually set in like small town New York State in the part of the Hudson Valley where the Legend of Sleepy Hollow comes from. So that's referenced a fair bit, which is something I know Brittany feels really, really strongly about. And they're just cute. You know, they ride horses, they solve mysteries. The girl has really amazing chemistry with this boy that they like found living homeless because he was running away from an evil stepfather. And it's like really weirdly charged and adorable. and they, another really, really fascinating thing I find about it is the old slang, because they use words a lot like ridic and legit, which are both really big slang now. And that kind of shortening of words has always happened. And those two particular ones, I think, are, you know, originated in the 1920s, but people haven't always used them. They go in and out of fashion, those kind of slang words or shortenings, and clearly they were in fashion at the time when they were written, and they're in fashion now, but there was a big gap in the middle where they weren't. So it was really amusing that people were being like, don't be ridic to each other in these books, because that's so internet slangy. But anyway, they're super cute, and I'm really, really excited by just sitting there and like reading them like one after the other and one after the other. And yeah, I never read any of the other ones that were, I think, more traditional, like Nancy Drew or any of the other detective ones or the other kind of series like Hardy Boys and stuff like that. Like these ones clearly aren't as prevalent in the American culture as those ones.
Yeah, no. I also did not read those though as a child. I did not like I didn't like reading about teenagers when I was a child. I preferred reading the Mary Kate and Ashley mystery books.
Oh yeah, those were.
That was
Blue
a thing?
Ribbon Mystery was my favorite book report I've ever done.
That's the one with the horse, right?
Oh my god, I don't know what this is, but now I need it.
Oh, it's a thrill ride. It's a thrill ride.
Yeah, they're pretty delights.
Yeah, I don't know if I ever would have chosen mysteries. As a kid, I just sort of, as I said, like had them given to me and then liked them, but it's. Yeah, the character, they're very kind of like, I think Nancy Drew, as far as I know, she was like quite like, you know, pretty and popular and stuff like that. And whereas these kids are kind of derpy and like they're a bit more down to earth and it's like country life. And I really enjoy them. And I really enjoy my gigantic box of them that I'm burning through at the moment. So that's my current book experience compared to the ones you had to offer today.
But I do like your like logic of picking up something that's easier to get into and read, because when I get into like a book rut, I just need to get through the first book and I don't care what it is. It's usually I will reread, like I have reread Sarah Dessen's books 100 times because that's like my kickoff. That's like they just get me right away and they're easy to read. And then once I'm done reading one of those, I can read it in a couple hours. I'm like, okay, great. Now I can read everything that I've been meaning to read because I'm in the zone.
I totally get you. I used to have this thing where when I was really not feeling good, like emotionally, like if I was really stressed or anything like that, I would. Here is what I would solve. How I would solve it. I would go to our bookstore in the local mall where in the suburb where I lived. Go to the bookstore, buy a brand new young adult book, usually something like a Sarah Dessen book, and then I would go and order 2 mini pizzas from the mini pizza takeaway, Pizza Hut takeaway that they had there, and I would sit in the food court with white noise and I would eat my mini pizzas and read the book from start to finish, and that would be incredibly healing and meditative for me. And that was like my coping mechanism for like 7 years, so... Yeah, I feel that. Sarah Dessen, I have a lot. A British young adult author called Sarah Manning, who I feel like she writes a lot of like stuff tangentially related to the music industry, which I really like a kid who was in a band or whatever, but they're really, really good. And I think it was Sarah Manning, and just a bunch of others. So, yeah, it is very easy for me to get back into reading that way. But, yeah, it's definitely what I needed to actually be able to read books, like, without being intimidated and by them at the moment. So I'm into it. And, yeah, I want to hear from anyone out there who has even heard of Trixie Belden, because I feel like I'm literally the only person on the planet except for this one girl I met at Comic-Con and my brother's ex-girlfriend from 20 years ago. So, yeah. All right, now that we've got excited about everything.
Let's bring it down.
Let's bring it down a notch. Yeah. Let's go back into your Harry Potter problems, because it's, I feel like,
great, maybe let's bring it way down.
I feel like we should have maybe done yours back to back, like gone like Brittany, me, you, and then carried on the conversation, because now we're just
going
to be
so
like,
so depressing though.
Okay. So. Let's hear it, because I'm curious.
Okay. So mine is my conflicted feelings on Ilvermorny, if that's how you say it. The American school, because I love the idea of an American school, because then I can go there. And of course I took the Pottermore test and I got Thunderbird, and I was really proud because I was like, see, I always knew I was soulful. And I have this whole theory about how, like, the Hogwarts one is like your solar sign and your American house is like your lunar sign. But anyway, but also, like, it just kind of sucks, and it should probably not have been done that way, or definitely not have been done that way. So, like, the part of me that is sensible and rational and cares about humans knows that it's wrong, but, like, my selfish part is like, oh, but it's so fun to pretend I'm a Thunderbird. But basically it is wrong, because as we were talking about, J.K. Rowling, she can be problematic, and basically she's appropriating, like, not only someone's culture, but, like, their religion to feed her fantasy world. And that's really not cool, especially considering, like, the way that the U.S. is treating Native Americans at all times. But right now it feels really prevalent with Standing Rock and everything going on. So, it really sucks that she's like, yeah, taking these things that are important to people's, like, religion, and, like, flipping it around and being like, just kidding, there's no such thing as this. It's really this instead.
Yeah.
So
it's quite out of touch, because it is such a big difference between, like, mythology, which she's tapped into with the Harry Potter books. And then, you know, but mythology in Britain is not necessarily anything, you know, maybe there are, you know, people who follow Druid religions or Celtic religions that are like, fuck you, J.K. Rowling, as well. But it's not as prevalently obvious as, you know, the difference between mythology and spirituality with the Native American stories. So, yeah, it's a little out of touch.
Yeah.
I'm not too familiar with, like, a lot of how the Native American culture, you know, what has happened there. Obviously, it's not something that we've ever really been in touch with. But
yeah,
well,
it just seems more prevalent right now, because, like, she is basically taking a big part of their spirituality and religion and appropriating it to fit what she wants it to do, to, like, be magic. So it's not a real religion. It's like magic. And, like, right now they're having a lot of, like, Standing Rock is this thing that's going on. I'm not well-versed enough to speak on it by any means. So the basic thing is that it's this land that is their private land. Like, it's Native American private land given to them, or not given to them, but, like, the U.S. has acknowledged it's private land, and they're, like, trying to drill pipes down into it, and it's going to pollute the water, and also it's, like, a religious site. So it's basically like drilling pipes through a cathedral and then ruining the entire population's water. So it's great stuff. So it's just the way that people have been treating a minority population for centuries now. And she's just feeding into that with this. So
yeah, we have a massive you know, Aboriginal history in Australia, obviously, as well, because we were one of the last places settled and one of the most most terrible to the native people here. I feel like there's like one or two mentions in, like, I think maybe Fantastic Beasts or something like that about the things that might have tied into what we have with the Aboriginal religion here as well. Like, I feel like maybe there was just one or two things that came from Aboriginal legends that she's mentioned, but she didn't write a whole entire website, like, in explaining it in convoluted fashion. I don't know. The Ilvermorny story was weird, regardless of anything else. It was really unexpected and strange, and I kind of wonder how long she's had that in her head and whether she told anyone about it before deciding to publish it and being like, maybe that's not a thing or something like that. So I don't know. Brittany, how did you feel reading it, like the Ilvermorny story?
Look, I want to be excited for Fantastic Beasts. I really do. I am. But having all of this preface it and like trying to like build a whole nother world and then just feeling like, oh, we're going to be ripping this off and making it work because we have to make, like, there's already history there and we have to, like, you know, but this is what really drives me crazy about this, is that these are these hidden magical worlds. Like, you made it work in Scotland and didn't really tap into, like, you know, the Loch Ness monster driving you, like, driving your magic or anything like that. Like, you know, and I know that's apples and oranges as to what we're talking about, but the fact that you can build a world within a world and not have it really be taking in so much of somebody else's culture from the start, why couldn't you do that here? It's the same exact thing. It's a world within a world. You don't need bring it in.
Yeah, because I think that there's the issue of, like, I don't want to think that she was being terrible on purpose, and I'm sure that she wasn't.
I'm sure she wasn't. I think that she was being ignorant.
You know, I think that, you know, she was probably quite well-meaning and trying to say, like, oh, you know, if I just made it something, you know, whatever, like Salem-based, you know, like something that was Puritan-based or something like that, that mm-hmm. would be, you know, that would be racist, or that would be not appreciating, you know, like the history of the United States before white people. But Britain is so uncolonized. Like, that's the thing. Like, Britain is so uncolonized that it's impossible to, like, kind of balance what she did there, like, anywhere else. And I feel like that she was trying to get a balance between, you know, oh, it wasn't only white people that had magic and, you know, that kind of thing. But how she did it was not very good. Like, she's invented magical versions of things that never existed for the British Harry Potter stuff. You know, like, she's invented creatures and stuff that never existed. I'm not sure why she didn't just invent ones with this as well, rather than, like,
taking things that other people find sacred and, like, twisting them to fit.
Yeah. I'm not sure why she didn't just invent magical versions of things from American history rather than using ones.
Yeah,
I guess,
exactly.
Is the best way to put it.
I feel like she just took it and used it as a template instead of, you know, making her own stuff, which she is good at. She's great at making up stuff. Mm-hmm. She does it on Twitter all the time with relationships that she says don't exist. So,
all right. Look, she cast Jamie as Harry Potter, and I just have to keep hanging on to that, otherwise I'll totally lose my head at her. So I'll just
and it's so just have like, to... I know everyone likes to hate on Cursed Child, and I feel really bad for every single person who cannot see what Jamie does as Harry Potter, because, oh my god, it's so good.
I read 3 pages of the book before I put it down, because I was just
fair.
Like, no, this is
that
making
is so
me too
fair.
Angry.
I have not read the book yet of Cursed Child, because I am planning to see the show at a time.
I haven't read it yet. I mean, I haven't actually, like, taken the time to be like, is this any good? Because I just, like,
I feel like it to if you
head.
Read it, you would not like it. Brittany.
Exactly.
I don't see why there's any need to, since you saw it.
Yeah, and that's what I keep saying to myself, too, because I'm like, I don't need to, why am I going to try and ruin something? It's the same thing with why I don't read Pottermore. Why am I going to try to ruin something? It's just going to make me angry.
No, so it's so stupid. It's like, the first three pages are literally like, Ron makes a dumb joke, Ron makes a dumb joke. Everyone laughs, everyone laughs.
That's the same in the play, though. his character made me so angry just because they did nothing with him, and it's so sad.
The more I go on with Harry Potter as an experience...
She hates on Ron so much. I don't understand, JK. I don't understand.
The more I go on with Harry Potter and the more, you know, that people who, you know, read the books are growing up and engaging on, like, a more, I don't want to say, like, intellectual level, but, like... you know, a more critical level, all of these things that people have interpreted about the world are just so much better and deeper than, like, and then I'm like, surely she knew what she was doing. And then she talks, and it's like, no, you don't get it. Like, I didn't think it was shallower for you than it was for us. I thought that you got why we cared. And now I feel like she doesn't sometimes, and that worries me, if you know what I mean.
I do.
I don't know. Oh, well. Sorry. It's a very stressful
situation.
It's making
me so sad.
I see so much beautiful, like, you know, interpretation of, like, and, you know, talking about, like, for example, Ron, like, why all of his actions are so important and, like, what is there for him. And I 100%... I don't even mean, like, talking about things like people inventing, like, oh, what would it be like for Muslim students at Hogwarts, like, which is, like, something that's pretty prevalent in the UK and it's never addressed in the book and stuff. Like, you know, people, you know, having all of these theories about the Harry Potter world and, you know, to make, you know, to carving out spaces in the Harry Potter world to make, you know, to make people fit, which I think is really, really great. And it's obviously there's only so much that she can do in 7 books for children that were written a decade ago, but... I love people's ongoing interpretations and, you know, how far that world can reach. But there's some stuff that I'm like, JK, you really, Joe, good friend Joe, you needed to care more about this. Or if that's really what you think about that character, I'm not sure what you were writing. Like, what did you write if that's what you think, if you know what I mean? But anyway, oh, God.
Let's talk about something else.
Okay, I want to talk up my mind quickly because it's not that big a deal. It's just something that I was just like, what the fuck is this? And then I want to finish on Britney's because I think it's important. Mine is, has anyone been on YouTube this week and had the trailer play before a video for a movie called The Thinning?
No, but I did go watch it once you put it in here. And
holy
I kind of regret it.
Crap. Holy crap. What the shit is this? Like, I am screaming. So my understanding of this is that it is a YouTube-based movie. Like, it is YouTube have produced this movie or something. Maybe that's wrong, but that's what the ad seemed to say. Anyway, there is a movie coming out this year called The Thinning. And it is about a world not too far from now. Like, I guess it's post-apocalyptic. It looks, you know, society hasn't fallen or anything, but... the government has instituted basically aptitude testing for population control. So they euthanize people who don't score a certain percent on the test and that, you know, of all different ages once this has started to be, you know, started happening. Yeah, it's distributed by YouTube Red. So it's actually like a YouTube produced film, which is really weird, but whatever. It's like quite high budget. Like, it's not like, oh, it's filmed in my house. It's like got big sets and, you know, it's a big action movie.
It also has Legendary behind it, like Legendary Pictures, so it's got a legit studio too.
I didn't know who anyone in this movie was, but I let this movie trailer play because I was like, all right, I want to punish myself, I'm gonna watch this. Oh, it has Stacey Dash. She's the only person I know. Stacey Dash is
in Clueless. She's the worst.
Is she as a human being?
She is, yes. She is the one. She's... Did you not know this, Natalie?
No, I know nothing about her. Why would I...
going on recently. Like, she goes on Fox News and goes on these rants about, like, how Black Lives Matter is stupid and, like, why can't Black people just calm down and, like... No, she's the worst. People cool. hate her.
Okay,
I hate her.
That's awesome. All right, so she's the only person I recognize in it, but whatever. This movie is nightmare status to me. Not only is it probably not going to be very good, that's not what I wanted to talk about. It, like, it, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's going to be fantastically executed, but the concept, holy shit. Who let this happen? Like, I understand that, like, yeah, things have happened. You know, the Hunger Games, that's terrible as well. Like, that's, you know, but even that's, like, more removed from me than this idea of, like, eugenics is, like, sickening to me. And it's, I watched this and I was like, this is, like, my worst nightmare. Like, this is just horrific. And yeah, it's just a not too distant future where basically everyone has to take these aptitude tests. And then the population is thinned out because they're only keeping the you know, the best of the people most worthy to society in whatever way that they deem. And it was also
creepy. Like, now that you've pointed that out with the eugenics thing, I realized it was, while I was watching it, I thought it was really creepy how all the kids were like blonde, like all of the main children. So now that you point out the eugenics thing, that adds like an extra creep factor.
And I guess the story is like that. One of the kids taking it fails and thinks that there's no way that they possibly failed, and then they find out that it's rigged. And one of the kids who fails is like the son of like one of the government officials that actually started this program, and he's like, soz, yeah, you're gonna die. But the concept is horrifying to me, to the point that I'm like, I don't think this movie should exist. Like, not, and I don't mean to like censor art or whatever and say, oh, that's too horrible to write about or something like this, but this is just sickening and I can't deal with it. And it's kind of reminding me of like a little bit, like on an extreme scale, of like the conversations that I've seen online about recently about, you know, people trying to mandate like the who can go to university and stuff like that. Like, you know, even that kind of thing of like, you know, the issues with privilege and or like with lowering the standards of university education or something like that, you know, that it used to be like the best of the best and now more people can go and participate at different levels, and how that's like muddying the waters of higher education.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Since you've brought it up, because I don't really understand how Australian university works, but from what I've been told, there's like a test you guys have to take, right? And like, if you don't pass the test, you don't get to go. Is that how it works?
Yeah. So in Australia, our university is basically in your final year of high school, you do something called it used to be called the higher school certificate. They've changed it since I was in school. And so this is how you get into university, at least in my state in New South Wales, unless it's for a specialty place where, you know, you have to audition like a performing arts. In our high school, you pick your subjects for 11th and 12th grade. You do it as you do your year 11 and 12 as a 2-year course in however many subjects or units. At the end of that year, the final year 12, you do a set of exams called the HSC, high school certificate, one in each subject. And then those grades plus your grades from the 2 years of like, you know, coursework, like assessments and stuff like that, those are kind of like halved up. So like half based on your progress work and half based on the exam. Those are then all given a grade for each subject, like say, you know, 60, 90, whatever it is, like, you know, something out of 100. And then those are put together on basically a bell curve. So you might get like, as I said, it used to be called HSC and the mark used to be called UAI, which is a University Admissions Index or something. I think it's different now. And then you would apply to courses basically. So, and this is before you got the UAI as well. So say I wanted to do arts law, you know, I wanted to, because when you apply to university in Australia, you're not applying to the university, you're applying to the course. You are not applying just to attend and then picking whatever you want when you get there. You're applying to a course, like to a bachelor degree, particular one. Say I wanted to do arts law, you know, and then so I want to go to Sydney University. That's the university I work at currently. So I want to go to Sydney University. I want to do arts law. So I might put my four choices for what I want my grade to go to towards arts law, and then maybe straight arts, and then maybe social sciences, and then I might put arts law at University of New South Wales or something like that, in order of preference of like those are the courses that I want to get into. Then when your final mark comes out, basically each of those courses at any university will, based on, it's kind of based on popularity. It's kind of based on like their, how they want, you know, how hard they want it to be for people to get in. So say I wanted to do arts law at Sydney University and it was my first preference and my UAI came out and it was 95.6. And then the arts law at Sydney course was 96, if you know what I mean. It means I wouldn't get into that course. I did not get into my university course. But say arts on its own was like 94, I would then get my second preference and that's the degree that I'd get to be enrolled in and I would be able to try and transfer, you know, later on if I wanted to. But yeah, you apply for the course, not the college, and you apply, and it's very much based on what that final score of your, which is an average of your 2 years of schooling, ends up being, you know, and the, basically the more popular a course is, the, you know, the higher the mark to get in will be, if that makes sense. Does that sound totally crazy to you?
Yes.
Really?
I mean, it makes sense, it does. But it sounds, absolutely
totally insane.
Like, do you think that's too harsh?
It sounds like to me. I do. I feel like it really gives an advantage to privilege because if everything is based on a test, like, okay, I'm an SAT teacher / ACT teacher. Yeah. The first thing they told us on our training is that the SAT / ACT is kind of a mess and that it has no, I mean, it like can quantify some things, but it has no bearing on how well you'll do in college or in life because the people with the highest scores are like what they've proven over decades are the people who it mostly has is based on like income level. So what your parents make tends to give you a higher score because you're able to study for the test and acquire tutors and like you probably have a better home environment so you can study for school and things like that. But that's not necessarily like your capability level or how hard you're willing to work to make it. And it just seems also like a lot of kids, depending on their home life, it's really rough in high school. And so you need to take some time and like, what do you do if you don't get in? But then like later on, you're like, no, I want to go back to school. And you like, is there community college? Like, how does this work?
There's a few options. Interestingly, there are actually special circumstances that can raise your UAI points. So if you are if you have certain issues that would have, you know, whether they're disabilities or whether they are, sometimes it's income based, you can apply for extra points to your UAI, which sounds completely bizarre as well, or you used to be able to. And it's slightly less removed than the SATs. It's kind of like, because it's a culmination of like basically all of the schoolwork that you've been doing in whatever subjects and you get to pick the subject. So it's a little bit more tied into your general work that you've been doing rather than sitting down. But it is, you know, the end part is a final exam period as well. But I don't know too much. There's definitely the equivalent of community colleges. There's TAFE, which is like technical colleges, which are kind of like that. And then you also have mature age students, which are university, which are basically based on an application, not on a score. And then there are going to be other colleges that are based on applications as well. And TAFE is usually based on applications, which is like the community college. But we also don't pay for university straight up. We have a government subsidy for university. So the government pays the university fees. We don't have the restrict. I understand the problems with the testing in advance, but one thing we don't have is anything restricting people from going to university based on cost once you're in, because the government pays it until you reach a certain pay grade. So once you start making a certain amount of money down the line in future, then you are required to start paying back your university debt. But a lot of people never even reach that and never pay back their university debt, which is probably a little bit weird, but it's how it is. And so once you're in, and a lot of people in Australia, because we only have a couple of cities, don't travel to go to university. So they are going to a university in their city and they usually remain living at home during that period. So the culture for university here is very different. It definitely costs a lot less just to go, like, you know, at the time, like, you don't have to front up the money at the time. But yeah, I mean, the process of actually getting in is very different and very strange compared to the US one. Though I don't really understand the US one, like, how come you just get to go to the university without actually being in a certain degree or anything like that? Like, I don't understand that. Anyway, tangent. I don't know if that's as bad as eugenics, but this movie, I'm just not okay with it, basically. Full stop, the thinning. I'm not okay with this movie existing. I don't think it's an idea that should have been put out into the world. I think it's too disturbing. Like, The Hunger Games is incredibly disturbing. For me, this is like 5,000 times worse. So, yeah, you guys watched the trailer, did you?
Yes.
Yes, we did.
And did it make you feel bad?
It just made me remember those days where, like, you would go into school and then you'd have testing for, like, 3 days and you'd have half days every day and you'd get the results back. And when I was in school, they didn't matter that much, like, the actual standardized state testing stuff. But now they matter so much that it makes me uncomfortable to think about. Because, like, a lot of schools now are just like, oh, if they don't meet this testing score levels, they don't get funding. And a lot of people, a lot of teachers are just like, oh, we have to teach the test and not teach.
You don't have to teach the test. You have to teach students. Oh, my gosh.
I know. Exactly. I'm with you on that. You have to teach the students.
No, but Brittany, it like really frustrates me because I like come from a family of teachers and like I'm a teacher, but my mom is such a good teacher and her kids have like the highest test scores, but she like teaches them. But I feel like so many, now I'm just getting on a rant. I feel like so many teachers who complain is just because they're like tired of teaching and they don't want people to know.
I agree. And they just get passive and they're like, well, nothing I teach them matters because I only need to worry about getting them to get these scores on the test. And that's not what you should be focusing on.
But then some people get mad because they are testing and they like don't want, they're not getting good grades. And it's like, because you're not teaching your kids. So maybe you should teach them instead of like.
There's so much wrong in education. So much.
Oh my God. So stressful. At least we're not all getting killed for it, but you know, just give them time. Just give them time and we'll see. Brittany, let's finish up on your problem this week. Because I feel like I feel like I know where this is going, but I want to hear about it. So let's talk. Let's talk. How are you feeling? The first episode you were on, it's titled "The Only Gilmore Girl," which I feel like is going to tie pretty strongly into your issue.
I know. Okay. So the other episode came out today or yesterday?
Last night.
And I saw that title, and I was like, "Well, I know what my gripe is going to be, and it's about Gilmore Girls."
Okay,
here's the gist.
It came out like today because
all right, here's the gist of where I'm at. I watched Gilmore Girls at a time where there was internet. I was not on it. I was not aware. No one in my school was watching it, so I knew one person in my second period class in high school who watched Gilmore Girls, and we would talk about it 5 minutes every day before the bell rang. And that was the only outside community conversation that I ever had about the show.
Was this live when it was on air?
Yeah, it was on air.
Yeah.
And so it felt like when you watch something like that so far removed and so in a bubble, you take a bigger sense of ownership of it. And I think that coming into this revival, the thing that's bugging me the most is anything written about it that gets put into the world.
Is anyone else talking about Gilmore Girls or having an opinion?
I don't even want like random people who I've known. I actually had this conversation with someone literally this week, a dear friend who I've known since our first day in kindergarten, who said, oh, you must be excited about the Gilmore Girls trailer. I'm just not. You know, maybe I should watch it. And I literally said to her, please don't watch it.
No.
Watch it. Don't talk to me about it. She goes, what do you mean?
Yeah.
I go, I have too many people coming at me wanting to talk about it. And I really don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about the new like, I'm excited to watch it. I'm excited to turn off my phone and watch it in peace. The problem is now that we're in such a world of real-time feedback that I don't need to know what everyone's thinking at every scene and every turn and every twist. But then again, I also am a writer and have to cover things because no one else is writing about it. And so I'm caught in this like catch-22 where like no one is like, we need to put up material, but also I don't want to be the one to do it because it's ruining my experience of it. But yet I love it so much and I want to talk about it, but I don't want to talk about it. I want to talk about it to the right people. So
I love you for saying this so bluntly. Can I just say, because this is a factor of fandom that's like not talked about, or people like, you're not allowed to say things like this. You're not allowed to, I don't want to use the word gatekeep because I don't think it is gatekeeping. I don't think that's what you're doing.
Yeah, no. I'm not, like, I feel like everyone who has loved Gilmore Girls in particular, and even this really extends into something else, which I'll hit on real quick in 1 second. But I don't feel like I'm a gatekeeper by any means. But I feel like if I have to write about it, it immediately, whoever comes off as writing about it, I feel like they think that they are. And they might not think that, but that's how I'm feeling about it. And so I don't want to say anything. And it's hard because now my brain is sort of like, I almost, when the trailer came out, I almost was like tweeting before my brain could catch up and say, I don't want to actually put that into the world, because that's how I'm geared now. And I don't like that. So I think with Gilmore Girls going forward, because after this trailer thing just really like made me stop and think about how I want to approach this to where it still means something to me and it's not instantly ruined by millions of opinions that are coming at me and I can't stop them from coming at me, is just to just take it for myself and watch it for myself. And the same thing is going for this Will and Grace revival stuff that's happening.
Oh, yeah.
If you think my Gilmore Girls feelings of ownership are bad, my feelings of ownership over Will and Grace are much worse. And when NBC, or not even NBC, some random person said that there are talks happening about bringing it back this week, I was like, I got text messages and calls and I appreciate it. People know I'm into it. I don't want it back in the world because it's so perfect in its bubble. And that was something that I was completely alone in watching. My family didn't watch it. No one in my school watched it. None of my friends watched it. When I went to college, I found one other person who had seen every episode. Just one. It felt like so foreign that anyone would ever even think to say, or they'd be like, oh yeah, I've seen a few episodes here and there. So that was one area where I was like, this is mine. And not in like I don't care if other people watch it. I just don't want to hear about it. And I don't know how to prevent that in this day and age with all these revivals and reboots coming out. It's just bugging me so much.
I feel so strongly about how perfectly you said all of that, because ownership is something I've struggled with for a long time. You know, from childhood, honestly, and like, you know, learning that, oh, that's not a thing that we should say to people, is it? And then kind of back through the loops of fandom and writing and whatever. But there are some things that I feel very strongly about, you know, whether it's just because of what my personal experience was like when I had them, that I don't feel comfortable engaging with, but I also don't want anyone else to do it, so I have to, if you know what I mean. Like, it's kind of weird. For example, I've always, always, always been really grateful. The biggest thing for me, I've spoken about this a couple of times, was Tamora Pierce, the fantasy author. Her entire series of books was the most important and influential and most immersive thing for me before Harry Potter, before anything else, before fandoms. It is like my number one most influential thing as a child and as a teenager. And if they ever like, and it's been like talked about, adapted for 30 years or whatever, like they've kind of, but nothing's ever happened. If that ever got like
so hard,
if that ever got adapted, I would not allow anyone else to cover it. Like I would fight people. You know, if I was writing for a site, you know, whether it was like Hyperball or writing anywhere else, I would be like, no, like this is mine. I have to cover it. But I would want literally no one to talk to me about it. And I would just be so like, no, this is all wrong. I can't handle this. But I also would not be able to handle letting someone else do it, if you know what I mean. So that would be really, really bad. And that was the first thing that I really had that ownership, I don't know if we want to call it problem or whatever with. But and then a couple of years ago, I had it again for the first time in ages. With the Maggie Stiefvater series, The Raven Cycle, which is a newer young adult series, which is very popular currently, and it was a New York Times bestseller. But my experience of it was so private that I was literally like, you know, when I heard people being like, oh, I want to read it, and I'm like, no. Like I was like literally like being – I was selecting people to be like, I want to talk about this, but can you read them? Because I know you will engage with them in the way that I want to talk about it. Like, for example, Jack, our Jack, I made him read them because I knew that he would get it. But then there have been other people who have kind of like, the worst is when people see you talking about a thing so much that they're like, oh, you're making me interested in it. And it's like, that was not my intention. And I never want to speak to you about this ever. Do you know what
yes,
I mean with that?
No, I totally get that.
And it's so rude and it's such a terrible attitude to have, but it's impossible to avoid. I don't know. Sometimes there's just like,
well, no, I think you, that's a great point because for a long time you keep saying to me, is that something that I should watch because I make you watch all these shows that I like. And at some point I'm just like, no, I don't want anyone to watch it ever again because I just want to like, I don't want to force something on someone and then they have a bad experience. You know what I mean? Or like, you know, you love something and someone comes back. And even if it's something as like minimal as being like, oh, well, you know, that one scene just really bugged me. I'm like, oh, she hates the whole series and the whole series is tainted and it was stupid. Why did I ever give it to her to watch? You know, it's like, it's very... because of that private experience you have with the content, it sort of like sets it's like balancing on like a pin, you know, it's like it could fall off at any moment because something could just like shatter the glass basically. And then you can't see it any other way. And I'm so nervous about that happening.
Well, I mean, I feel like
this was super illuminating because now I feel like I understand why the super fans all hate me because I'm always ragging on Buffy. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, I get feel that like, too. I feel like it's changed for me with Buffy. I don't feel like Buffy was that private an experience for me. It certainly wasn't that fandom based either. It wasn't like fandom reaction based. But I do feel like that I do not like Buffy as much now as I once did. But that's okay. Like, I don't mind. And it's more like I've realized that, like, things could be much better. And it's also not just you guys. It's also Joss and his career and what has become very obvious, you know, that used to be like, oh, good job. It's like, wow, you know, really never progressed from that. Okay. But the Tamora Pierce thing was something that I had for so long that I really, like, it really became noticeable to me when I stopped being like that, when I started being like, I like this thing, everyone should watch it, rather than I like this thing, you all need to fuck off, basically. So that was something that really changed for me. But then with The Raven Cycle, it really came back in a way that really shocked me, that I was like, oh my God, like, I thought I was past this. I'm not past this. I just hadn't had that thing that I had that about. And then Supernatural, which is obviously the biggest internet fandom that there is, like in terms of stuff like the Tumblr algorithms and all of the stuff that they've been, you know, mentions, like, you know, Twitter mentions. It's the engagement rate between people who watch Supernatural and people who engage online with it. I don't know what that percentage would be called, if you know what I mean. The volume who engage online versus the actual viewership is such a high percentage. It's like 80 or 90%, if you know what I mean. And so it's a huge, huge, huge fandom. But because when I watched it initially, I watched it in a bubble of not publicly talking about it. I mean, you guys might have seen a bit, but like compared to other stuff, like it was very, you know, I watched 11 seasons and did not talk about it publicly. I talked about it privately with a few people who had, you know, introduced me to the show. show, one of which I actually want to talk about in another episode, because that's a whole other gripe that I have about internet culture to talk about another time. But I was talking very privately because I did not want to engage with that fandom, and I was never planning to write about it, ever. I was planning to not cover it for Hyperbole. I did want to do the coverage at Comic-Con because for reasons that we didn't have someone who was up to date on the show, and I was like, well, if no one else is going to do it, I want to fucking do it. But I was never going to write about it for Hyperbole. And then the reason that I did was purely because it was said to me that our other writer, Caitlin, was dropping it. And I was like, well, if no one else is going to do it, I'm going to have to fucking do it. And now I am. And it's really, that fandom is like so much. And like the way that, like, it's like thousands and like what you said, it's like millions of people like talking about like every episode is new. And I've had like some not serious hate, but a little bit of hate from people online, because that's fandom is like got some delusional fuckers in it, people who are just like assuming that what I've written is like either that I haven't watched parts of the show, or that like obviously this was my intention, or like obviously I'm pandering to certain people. And I'm like, I literally watched this show in a bubble without any of you people, and nothing here is anything except my own unjaded opinions. So I would really like it if you stop telling me what I think, or like how I'm obviously a member of this fandom faction or something insane. And I don't know. I can't deal with it. I really, like as I said, it's one of the biggest shows on the internet, but my experience of it was so private. And now I do feel like I don't want anyone else like in my pool of resources to be covering it when I have the opportunity to.
I totally get that, and I hate.
But I also hate it. So I don't know what to fucking do.
Yeah, like it's a very very hard line to walk, and also you brought up like the division of like people into like, you know, oh, you're clearly pandering to this camp or that camp that you didn't even know existed. I feel like with Gilmore Girls, it's a little different because a lot of people are really gunning at you to be like, well, you're like, they want to prove that they're the biggest fan. And I personally don't care if you watched the whole series last week and are excited about the revival, or you watched every episode live with your mom like I did because I was a really cool kid. You know, it's like, I don't care about where you're coming from and coming to the show and, you know, whatever. I just want to enjoy it, and I don't want to have to feel like I have to prove myself against other things, because that's not, I don't care. I want to watch it by myself and be happy. And I feel like I'm not allowed to do that. And it makes me sad.
Yeah. Supernatural people really don't want you to be positive about the show either. They really don't want you to like the show. Even the fans, they're like, they hate you for liking the show.
Maybe
so that's
I
cool.
should watch that. I feel like I would fit right in.
Oh my God. You would hate
Ariana,
it so
you
want to
watch Supernatural with me?
You would hate it so much. I don't know, Ariana, have you ever had issues like this with ownership or like with
I was
like
trying
this?
To think of something, and like, I really couldn't until
people.
Well, I couldn't think of anything until I realized the reason I couldn't think of anything is because I quit the thing that I felt so much ownership over. So Jane the Virgin, I felt so much ownership over for a lot of different reasons, mostly because, unfortunately, that show is like the single representation of like my culture on television. Mm-hmm. But then it started making me so angry. I like could not watch it anymore because I felt like my soul was being crushed. So I had to stop watching it because I couldn't deal with other people being happy. So that's my only one.
There's like a weird thing going on with when a show comes out, a newer show, like for example, Jane the Virgin is still relatively young. It like you either have to be there from the start and then, you know, nothing can be done about like what your position is, or you can come into like a show that's been on the air for 11 years and catch up. and it's a completely different experience. But then these revivals are a whole nother animal. There's just so much. Like, you get people with the revival coming out of the woodwork who are just like, I've watched this show my whole life. And I'm like, I have known you for 25 years and I've never known that you watched this show. Like, it's just like, it's so strange.
Yeah, I definitely had that with Supernatural as well. Not that it's a revival, but I had people, when I started watching it and I was like, I've talked about it a little on my private Twitter, which has only about 30 or 40 followers, like 40 people on it. And of that, like people I've known for 10 or more years, I'm like, you never told me. Like, that they were all like, not all, it was like a few, but a bunch of my very close friends were all like, oh, and I'm like, I literally never knew that you watched this show. So I don't know. It's really weird. This is definitely a thing that is very frowned upon, you know, in fandom to be possessive, basically, because it's not even gatekeeping. It's not like, I will actually say this about Supernatural fandom. Not a single person that I have experienced has in any way been like, so new, get out. Like, that's not happened. That's actually been shocking to me that no one has had, maybe they have privately, but that's not an outright attitude that people have had, because people are definitely elitist about old fans in
other
series.
Well, I think
series.
That people, I mean, bringing it down even more, I think that it is prevalent, but I think it's more prevalent, unfortunately, with, like, the, like, trolley men who, like, don't want women to read comics or don't want, like, the pandering of diversity and things like that. I feel like that's where it's more prevalent. And now I'm sure to get the trolls after me for saying that, but
I don't know if any trolls are listening to this podcast. You never
they
know,
haven't made it this far. They haven't made it 2 hours in.
We probably got rid of them
crafting their political commentaries.
Yeah, we got rid of them with Donald Trump. Yeah. Okay. I don't know. This is an ongoing issue that I'm, you know, always interested to talk about. Like, I'm really glad that Brittany, you put that so succinctly, and that I didn't have to be the terrible one being like, I'm possessive about stuff, because I feel like that's always been something I've been really worried about talking about. So it's good. This is why I'm glad that we're doing this show, so we can have these conversations and feel like more validated about ourselves and stuff, or help each other out with these kind of problems. I think that's all of our problems for this week. I mean, there's probably a few more. But Ariana, did you want to give us a two truths and a lie so we can see how well we know you?
Yeah, I bet you guys can figure this one out. So I have climbed a pyramid, cuddled a panda, and eaten a crocodile.
So one of them is a lie.
Yes.
Okay. Brittany, any thoughts?
I want to say that the cuddling the panda is the lie. The pyramid, I think, is completely true. I think we talked about it. And the crocodile, I don't think is that far off, like, far-fetched. But the panda, I don't know where you would get access to a panda. So I'm gonna stick with panda.
I'm not sure. Crocodile eating is pretty common in Australia, but you haven't been here, have you, to Australia? So I'm not sure. Maybe they do it elsewhere as well. I'm going to say crocodile eating, just for the heck of it, is the lie. Panda, I know pandas, people can have panda experiences, but I don't know where you've traveled, so it's really six of one and half dozen of the other. I really don't know, like, which one would be the most likely to be a lie, because they all seem like destination experiences. So I'm going to say crocodile eating is a lie.
Well, Brittany is the winner.
Yeah.
I have climbed the Aztec pyramids in Mexico City, and I had a crocodile pizza when I was in Sydney.
So you have been here.
I have. I saw Batman in Sydney.
Have we talked about this before?
I don't know.
Was this since I've known you?
I think we did, because I think we talked about, so I went to World Youth Day in 2008, And okay, I think you talked about how there was so much traffic.
Yeah, all right. That makes sense. I don't think we, like, knew each other at the time when you came to Australia.
Oh, but
we
made definitely not.
Well, there we go. So Ariana has been to Sydney, where I live, and she's been to the Aztec pyramids because she's an Aztec princess. And
I am.
You know, did you claim your rightful throne on the pyramid?
I did not know at the time that I was an Aztec princess, but I had an inkling.
Oh, I'm so sad for you.
I feel like I've always known I'm royalty deep inside.
So I want to know about the Aztec princess heritage discovery.
So my uncle is really into, like, ancestry stuff, and it's really cool. but he found out that, so when Montezuma, who was the last Aztec, like, king, was killed, the Spanish conquerors, like, basically took his granddaughters and married them, like, the really wealthy elite. Because then they were like, we married a princess, and it solidified their their stature there. And so, one of my direct ancestors is one of these ladies.
That's awesome. I'm so excited. It's really exciting to me, but I don't think it's that surprising either. So, yeah. Okay. Question of the day. We have a hashtag ANA ask. Not about the weather podcast, anything. So every episode we're going to pull a question from a listener or a friend that we all have to answer. And this week we have one about some news that has happened from NerdyGeek77, who was one of the first people who picked up the first episode last week. I was very excited to see that person tweet so fast that they'd listened. I was like, oh my God, someone cares. So I've picked their question, and it is, what do you think of the Donald Glover casting as Lando? And that's obviously Lando Calrissian in the Han Solo prequel picture, you know, Star Wars picture that they're making. So I feel like Ariana might have a great answer about this, and I know that Brittany does not know anything about Star Wars.
I don't know. I feel like I'm the authority on this issue, guys.
Okay. All right. Let's get Brittany's
hot take. You might
be,
Brittany, because I feel like I don't know enough about – I don't know. I have conflicting feelings, but what do you feel, Brittany? How do you feel about Donald Glover?
Well, about Donald Glover, I feel great feelings towards him, especially because Atlanta's probably the only thing that I've seen him in. Besides this one episode of 30 Rock where he was in for 1 second.
I've also, like,
Mike,
Atlanta's, like, the only thing I've seen
Mike
him in.
What?
He was
in Magic Mike 2.
And he was amazing, can he I just say. Magic anyway. Carry on.
Yes, I forgot about that. He was in Magic Mike 2. Yeah, and so if his performance is anything like his performance on Atlanta, I'm sure it will be fantastic. But I have never seen Star Wars, so I'm sure he'll look great in some flowy robes and kicking some bad guy butt and making some deals, as one does as Lando. I think Lando does.
Shady character who ends up good. He's a really interesting character, actually, because he has this ethical problem of basically, you know, does he help his friend Han Solo or does he protect the entire city that he's responsible for running? And it's kind of, some people really don't like him and some people think that he's the best character in the series, and like it's kind of a but he ends up joining the rebellion and helping in the end as well.
Why are they casting him as Lando when he's older? Like, is this for a prequel?
Yes,
this is for the prequel.
Now they're making more prequels. Oh my God, I don't care about any of this.
Yeah, Han Solo's life as a young man, and you know, because he's meant to be, I don't know, 30 when they see the movie, and I guess this is like set before then.
This is ridiculous.
I don't know.
A lot of people.
I don't know how I feel about
this.
I still don't. I mean, I really like Donald Glover as a writer, and I really like him in Atlanta. That's kind of the only thing I've seen him in. I think of Lando as someone with a lot of charisma, and the original actor, just like in life, has a lot of charisma. He was on Dancing with the Stars as an old guy and was delightful, even though he couldn't dance. But Donald just seems like a more serious person than the other actor, who's unfortunately I cannot remember his name because I'm terrible.
Oh, was Donald? Well, he was also in The Martian. He was good in that.
He was great in The Martian, actually. Lando is a really interesting character for me because, as I said, like, I don't know how I feel about him. I don't know, like, about whether I... He does end up coming through and being a good guy, but I feel very conflicted about his whole plot in Empire Strikes Back, and I think that's the point. Billy Dee Williams is the name of the actor.
Yes, sorry, thank you.
But it's he's a very... He's a very confusing character for me. I know some people really love him. So I'm interested to see, like, his origin, because obviously him and Han used to be kind of, whatever you want to call them, space pirates together. They used to be, you know, con men and drifters and stuff, smugglers together. And then he turns respectable, and that's where we see him in Star Wars. And he wears a lot of capes. He doesn't wear the Jedi robes, yes. Brittany. He wears, like, intense, like oh my lush... Gosh. Capes and like these really, like, he's really extra, like his suits are,
it's
really
very
like
disco, like,
yeah. And I don't know, it should be interesting to see what he's like. I don't know if he's a little Donald Glover is, I love Community, so I was big fan of that and him in that, and I think he's been really fantastic in nearly everything I've seen him in. But he also had that weird thing a few years ago where he like stopped acting and wrote this big massive rant about how he wasn't going to act anymore.
Yeah.
Because he has his music project. And then he's, like, just quietly come back into acting without any explanation. And that's fine. Like, yeah, he's very talented and he's very successful. And I've really liked, as I said, everything. Like, I'm not even joking about Magic Mike. Like, I'm not being like, ah, Magic Mike. I love those movies as, like from a very deep, like, moral standpoint. I love those movies, and his character in that was, like, beautiful, and I loved him. But I don't know. It's weird. I mean, good for him. This is going to be really high profile, and I really didn't think that this is what he was, like, going for, given his past problems with acting. So that's what's confusing to it about me, to me about this, basically.
I hope it brings him some joy.
Yeah.
I mean, that is what I think he seems to lack for me, Natalie. I really do like, I think he's incredibly talented, but he doesn't seem like a very joyful, like, person. He seems like a serious, like, angry, like, you know what I mean, like, in pain for his art kind of person. And everyone else on Star Wars is so like, wee, like, we're along for the ride for fun, so hopefully this helps him.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. Speaking of Star Wars, I just would like to recommend that everyone go and read the adorable post on, I think it was The Hollywood Reporter, about a child watching Return of the Jedi for the first time. This was going to be my entire hype, this article, by the way, but then I feel like we might not get that much mileage out of it, so I'd put it with the other Star Wars thing. But it's been the other thing I've been obsessed with this week, this kid's review of Return of the Jedi, like his live reactions to it. And I want to believe so badly that this is, like, completely legit and true, because there are so many observations in it that I'm just like, oh, my God, child, like, I cannot believe this is, like, you're picking up on this. And I feel, like, really strongly about it. And he, like, keeps crying about Darth Vader and it keeps making me upset. But it's a fantastic article, Hollywood Reporter, about, like, a seven-year-old kid reviewing Return of the Jedi, and it's made me extremely happy this week. So that was, yeah, a mini hype related to Star Wars. You can read that in the show notes. I'm linking everything significant that we talk about that has an internet link each episode, so that is a thing you can do. But yeah, thank you for the question. I don't know how I feel about the Han Solo biopic in general. Like, I don't know if this is a thing we need, but it's happening, so I guess it's going to be okay. Is this the kind of thing you'd want? I'd prefer. Would you even want these kind of movies to keep happening? Like, would you like it if it was a Leia one, or do you just not here for it?
I adore Han, but I don't know why I would care to watch him without Leia in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, for me, there's no point. Isn't that called Indiana Jones? Like,
yeah, I know, right? Like, I'm like, oh, really? Like, it seems wildly unnecessary, but whatever. I would rather watch mean, there's nothing like a Luke. I think a Leia one would be the best, like because of her.
I think it'd be the best like, too. But also, like, I wouldn't want to. I wouldn't super care about that. Like, I care about them together, like the gang.
Yeah.
I don't really need their pre-life.
So, Brittany, you have not seen any Star Wars, and you feel like it is not something you are able to engage with.
Yeah, no. I've seen, like, I'd say 45% of Empire Strikes Back, but that's it.
Mm-hmm. I was very, very anti-Star Wars until last year when I watched it and then realized that it was, like, every conception I'd had about it was wrong. Basically, my entire thought about it was a misconception. And I've totally drunk the Kool-Aid now, but it is definitely a huge, not a huge undertaking because, you know, I think you've undertook much larger things in your time in the name of watching television or movies, but it is kind of a huge thing to jump into in terms of the cultural zeitgeist. So it may be just better to be like, that's a thing that doesn't exist in my world. And I was like that for so long. And I feel like I'm happy that I have it now, but also I definitely got along fine for 30 years without it being a thing for me. And now I'm there, and it's sort of slightly more stressful because I have to care about things like, why are you making a Han Solo movie? Whereas before I would have been like, I don't care. But there are people out there that are like this about Harry Potter. Like this, and it's the most comparable one for sure. There are people out there that know nothing in the, you know, and are just like aware that this massive phenomenon exists, but have never really engaged with it the same way that you are about Star Wars and that I was about Star Wars, about Harry Potter. Do you know any of them? Just out of curiosity?
No. I don't think so.
I feel like there's someone in my, like, wider circle that hasn't, and it stresses me out, but I can't remember. But it's just such a strange concept. Anyway, we'll move on from that.
Hasn't done what?
Read Harry Potter in the same way that Brittany hasn't experienced Star Wars.
I mean, I know people who have only seen the movies and haven't read it, but they've seen it. Like, they're still a part of it in a way.
They're not really, though.
Yeah, no, I don't. And it's my roommate from college who will never listen to this, so
it's
the thing I hate the most about her.
Okay, we'll just have a couple of pieces of general feedback before closing up for you now. So we had a Tumblr ask sent to us from Scream Wolf, Scream-Wolf, saying that clip at the end of the first episode was hilarious and relatable. It's why, and then they did the winky tongue emoji face. It's why I tell Siri to flip a coin for me now, haha. Which I, as I said before now, did not know that that was a thing you could get Siri to do. I live a Siri-less existence, so I was a bit surprised about that. What other things can Siri do for you that I will blow my mind, apparently?
Siri can tell you jokes.
Really?
Yeah, if you ask Siri to tell you a joke, she'll tell you a joke.
Can Siri tell me a joke now?
Yeah, hold on, I'll ask Siri. Siri, tell me a joke.
Two iPhones walk into a bar. I forget the rest.
That was Siri telling you a joke.
What the hell? That's so weird. Do you feel like Siri is your friend? Like, is it too much personhood, like,
given
to Siri?
I think that's the fourth time I've used Siri in the, like, 8 years I've had an iPhone.
Okay. Well,
two of the times were today. One time that I can literally remember using Siri was in the car, and I was driving, and I was like, I really want to listen to this song, but it's so far in the playlist, and I don't know what to do, and so I just held down my phone and I was like, Siri, play this song. And then she played it and I was like, I'm going to use Siri all the time. And then like 6 years passed and I haven't used Siri again.
It's adorable, but weird. I believe they made a movie about that.
That's a great movie.
Have you seen it? I haven't seen
her,
it.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. And then we had another one from Sarah Preston, who's at Waffles92, saying thank you to the ladies. of NATW Podcast Weather Episode 2 for keeping me company while I'm sick, a light in the darkness of an otherwise shit night. How does it make you feel that you're on a podcast that makes people say things like this?
That makes me really happy, Sarah. Like, get well soon. I mean, I hope you're well by the time this comes out. Otherwise.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
You're like, yeah. I think there's something bigger going on there.
I hope that you're well. Sarah. I hope that you're good, and I'm really glad that that episode made you happy. When I was editing that episode, that was the one, Brittany, where we talked about Magnus Chase, I got to that conversation where you were talking about how you'd only read it because Karen was finally allowed to pick the book for book hype. And
her evil ploy to get me to read Rick Riordan.
Like her recitation of like what happened and being like, oh yeah, you know, we finally let Karen pick and she chose Magnus Chase. Like I was like crying, laughing, listening to it while editing. So that is, I don't know if that's like super egocentric to be laughing at my own podcast at a conversation that I was a part of, but I did.
You
really
guys have
it.
Such different tastes on book hype. Like, it always seems to me when I'm listening, like, Brittany does not enjoy most
enjoy
of the things she has to read.
It's so bad. And yet I feel like I can't pick a book because no one will like it.
What's the last book you did pick?
No, actually, we had an in with the author, so I didn't pick that one, but I would have picked it. The last book I was responsible for was so long ago, and it was this awful, like, new adult book about this, like, werewolves, and I only picked it because it had werewolves in it, and I thought everyone would like it.
I just can't. So it wasn't a book you'd read before.
No, it wasn't something I've read before because we try to do newer releases. Like, we're doing an older book now, but I have said before many the past like few months of book hype, I'm like, I'm not reading another dystopian novel, and I'm not reading another thing where the girl has to save the day. I need a break. I need a break from the generic faceless girl who comes in to save a dystopian future. We read so many in a row, I couldn't do it again, so I put my foot down.
Is this why Karen's... Do you know that Karen's gripe on the last episode that we weren't on, the one that she recorded with Donya and Mitch, was people's hatred of dystopian novels? Was this your fault?
Probably my fault.
Oh, my God. Well,
I'm going to have to talk to her about that. It's probably my fault because I complain about it all the time. I think I'm worn down. I feel like I'm reading the same book.
They're all the same.
I cannot tell you the difference. Like, even when talking about books that we've done on Book Hype, I insert details from different stories into other books. I'm like, yeah, but then they had to go and talk to that person. They're like, that's a villain from another book. And I'm like, then I give up. I don't know. I don't know what happened in this book.
And in dystopian novels, like, even though the world is falling apart, the girl's greatest concern is always, like, she has to have the prettiest dress. Like, she always has a beautiful dress on the cover, and she's always, like, trying to marry the prince or something.
Or there's,
even
like, a
though
scene
the
where
world is falling apart.
The most plain and ordinary girl, like, puts on a dress for the first time, and oh my god, she looks so good. Or, like, she takes her hair down for the first time, and it's,
yes,
like...
Yes, she takes off her glasses, and it's Rachel Lee Cook.
I know. Yeah. Oh, my God.
I really don't read books like these. These are not the kind of books that I have ever read, so...
Me either, and then I joined
Book Hype. Whole new world. Wow, you sound so enthused. Okay.
It's getting much better. It's getting much better. Well, except the last book we read. That was a little rough, but... I enjoyed it in conversation form. See, that's it. I even compared it to Buffy. I was like, I hated this book every second that I was reading it. But then when we talked about it, it was fine.
That's how I feel about Buffy almost every week.
I know. I'm like, oh my god. I'm like folding laundry, and I'm like, this is my life. I'm never getting out of this.
I'm so sorry that you're stuck doing Buffy for however long, and that you hate it so much.
Like another 5 years.
What's your favorite thing about Buffy?
Right now, in this moment?
Yeah. About your,
Giles. I mean, I got the gift of Giles, and
that's true.
That's all I'm going to take away from this.
You really care about Giles. That's good. I feel like ambivalent towards Giles. I don't care either way that much. I like Spike and Anya. I think they're funny.
Mm.
I really can't stand the trio.
Oh, either.
Oh, God.
I think they're terrible people.
Wow. Wow. They're not great sometimes, yeah.
I think Anna and I will host an episode of this podcast where we can finally talk about Buffy without...
Where we can let it all out.
Just really, fear of really let it out.
Well, you can host an episode of this podcast anytime you want. Next time either of you be on, you can be the host. And you know, guide our terrible conversations. But, all right, so we should finish up because this three-person format was meant to be shorter, and it's not. So
it's longer.
You know, and it's like basically 2 a.m. for Brittany. So
I'm sorry about that. I think it was fun. I feel like that if people, you know, enjoy the things that we enjoy or hate the things that we hate, it might be fun for them to listen to. So that's all good. If anyone wants to ask us a question to answer on air, like our hashtag ANA, or reach out to us in general just to give feedback on, you know, one of the conversations that we've had, you can do that on NATW Podcast on Twitter or Facebook, or you can reach out on the notaboutthewetherpodcast.com website by sending an ask in the Tumblr format style thing. So you can do that to reach us. If you have something really long you want to say, you can send us an email, but I cannot imagine anyone needing that many words to commentate back to this podcast. I don't know. This is 2 hours long. Maybe you do. The other thing that would be really great is if you've enjoyed this podcast so far, please give us 5 stars on iTunes so that we look legitimate, because at the moment we do not have enough ratings to constitute an actual rating on iTunes. And I would really love this podcast to look like it actually exists. So
better go rate us.
You can if you want, but yeah, we would really, 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 really love that. Like I actually checked the downloads for the first episode and they're really like surprisingly high. But the ratio of people we hear from versus people who actually download is not high. And that's normal for anything except Supernatural, apparently. Everyone who watches Supernatural freaking runs their mouth on the internet. It's really common that the rate of common, you know, comment to listenership or to any form of medium is very low. But we would love to hear from you, not just to make ourselves look legit, but so that we don't feel like we're shouting into a void too much, because we need to know if this is working for people, I guess. It's working for me, but this isn't actually all about me, despite, you know, appearances. So, all right, we'll let you go now and talk to you guys in a little while. And yeah, feel free to get back to us. Let us know what you're hyping about or griping about. And yeah, thank you for listening to us run our mouths. So until next time, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.